From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. And on this day, she has not said she'll run yet, but a new poll is already predicting trouble if Senator Susan Collins does run for governor. And we'll look at how federal government decisions might impact Millinocket and Lewiston-Auburn. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The long and storied effort to get voter approval for a York County casino appears to be entering its next and more active stage, with a new political action committee and some experienced campaign consultants coming on board. Fred Bever has our story.
Under the full ballot item's wording, a company controlled by developer Sean Scott is the only entity that could gain a York County casino permit. Scott was the original force behind the Bangor Racino. His new gambit has been backed by a hard-to-decipher series of partners, including his sister Lisa Scott and a complex web of on- and offshore investors. Now a new PAC, Progress for Maine, has been registered, with its own web of connections to be unraveled. Its decision-maker is listed as Michelle B. Wilson. She is a principal in a firm called American General Corporation. That's a California-based project manager whose website also details benefits of the American EB-5 program, which gives green cards to big foreign investors in U.S. projects. The PAC is chaired by Charlene Cushing, a Farmington resident and participant in the state's harness racing industry. And the founding firm is called Atlantic and Pacific Realty Capital, which the Bangor Daily News reports has ties to Chinese businesses and EB-5 visa efforts. The new PAC reports more than $300,000 in debt and obligations, some of that to an international campaign consulting firm called Goddard Gunster, whose principals include Dwayne Bickford, former executive director of the Maine Republican Party. Another player, O'Neill and Associates, a Boston firm run by former U.S. House Speaker Tip O'Neill's son. Officials at the Maine Ethics Commission earlier this year launched an investigation into the finances behind the casino ballot referendum. That was in response to apparent failures to follow disclosure laws. On Thursday, the commission will take up Lisa Scott's objections to record subpoenas that the commission has tried to serve on her. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
A telephone survey earlier this month by North Carolina-based Public Policy Polling shows Republican Mary Mayhew is leading Senator Susan Collins by more than 10 points in a head-to-head race for the Republican nomination for governor. Several Maine political scientists say the poll points up a problem for Collins, but they say it's still very early in the game, if there is indeed a game at all. Mal Leary has more.
There are any number of reasons to be wary of early polls. First, the primary's not until next June, and Collins has not actually said that she will run. Still, that has not lessened interest in the race for governor that has already spawned 11 announced candidates. In addition to Republican Mayhew, there are 6 Democrats, 2 Greens, an Independent, and a Libertarian. University of Maine political scientist Mark Brewer says it's early in the political season, and some GOP voters polled may have been more interested in sending a message to Collins that they're not happy with her votes on issues such as the Affordable Care Act and not actually indicating how they would vote in a GOP primary.
A lot of them say they will not vote for Susan Collins. When, you know, we see here Susan Collins versus someone else, you know, 28% for the senator, 62% for someone else.
Brewer says the poll does suggest that Collins has problems with the Republican base, even though she recently was named the second most popular United States senator in the country. Brewer says all the polls must be weighed based on methodology used to determine sample and how it's structured. But even with those and other caveats, Brewer has no doubt Collins would win the election for governor if she could survive a primary. Jim Melcher, a political scientist at UMaine Farmington, agrees.
She clearly has some issues with some people on her right flank. A lot of people have thought her being elected governor would be just a matter of her announcing the race and the waters would part. And I think she'd still be certainly a favorite in a general election, but she has to get through the primary.
Both Melcher and Brewer say the poll, which has Collins at 33% to Mayhew's 44%, reflects the continuing polarization of politics in Maine and the nation. A survey this spring found that just under 50% of Mainers approve of the job Governor LePage has been doing, but this poll of just Republicans produced an approval rating of nearly 80%. They also warn that the primary is still a long way off and that a lot can happen in that time to change voters' minds. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Property owners and health advocates in Lewiston and Auburn are concerned about a bill before the U.S. Senate that they say could weaken regulations around lead poisoning. They say if it's approved, it could also shift the bulk of the burden of cleaning up lead paint to states and put children at greater risk for poisoning. Patty White has the story.
Betty Ann Sheets knows all too well about the problem of lead paint in Maine's old housing stock. The Democratic state legislator owns two apartment buildings in Lewiston that were built around the turn of the century, well before federal regulations banned lead paint in the late 70s. She opens the door of one unit that leads to an old winding staircase.
I can show you where I have a problem right now. This is the one thing that hasn't been taken care of yet. This beautiful old staircase. Apparently the first time they tested there was no lead, but over the years as it's worn, there may be some exposure in the wood, and they don't know why.
Sheets got a grant a few years ago to do lead abatement in her apartment buildings. Areas with exposed lead paint were either removed or encapsulated with a new coat of paint. Despite those efforts, one of her tenants' children tested positive for lead poisoning last year. Though it's unclear whether the apartment was the source of the exposure, Sheets discovered nicks on the walls that exposed old paint. When she tried to hire someone to clean it up, she found contractors trained in lead remediation were few and far between.
Because the funding stream for grants has been sporadic, there's not a lot of contractors who want to take the time and expense of doing the training and getting the licensing and the insurance that they need.
Out of a list of 8 potential contractors, Sheet says only 3 were willing to do the work, and it was a 2-month wait for the job to be complete. Sheets worries that if Congress approves something called the Regulatory Accountability Act, it will roll back federal standards and funding for lead abatement, making it even harder to clean up contaminated housing. That's something that Kevin Leonard of Community Concepts says Maine can't afford.
We're probably looking at 400 to 500 units right now that are posted and have to have lead abatement done by somebody.
Leonard is the manager of the Lead Paint Hazard Control Program at Community Concepts, which works on lead abatement across southern Maine.
And we don't have nearly enough money statewide to cover all these abatements. So it's going to have be a housing problem here very soon.
Because once a lead problem is discovered in a rental unit, tenants can't live in it until it's cleaned up. According to the Maine Center for Disease Control, lead can permanently affect a child's growth and development. Within the past year, the state has tightened its standard for the acceptable threshold of lead exposure for kids and allocated $1 million toward inspection and abatement efforts. Sophie Halpin of the Maine Conservation Alliance says if the Regulatory Accountability Act passes, it could stunt the state's momentum.
It is going to make important regulations that protect public health and safety much harder to pass.
The bill is part of a regulatory reform effort promised under President Trump. It would slow down the ability of federal agencies to adopt new rules by adding new requirements to the process. Halpin says updated regulations serve as important guidance for states.
So a lot of these local groups are kind of using these federal regulations as a starting point for their work and seeing what's the minimum that we need to do to protect Maine people. So without those regulations, it would be much more of a shot in the dark.
But supporters of the Regulatory Accountability Act disagree. Maine Congressman Bruce Poliquin joined his Republican colleagues in the House who all voted in support of the bill. His spokesman Brendan Conley says Poliquin doesn't think the bill would impact state lead rules and says the congressman has supported and will continue to support funding for lead remediation. The bill now awaits consideration in the U.S. Senate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And finally today, Congress has recessed for the summer and hundreds of lawmakers have fled the Beltway to reconnect with constituents in their home states. Today, independent Senator Angus King was in the Millinocket area, which has been economically ravaged by the loss of two paper mills, but is hoping for a rebirth. As A.J. Higgins reports, the region's fate may depend on decisions that come directly from Washington.
Walking with the aid of a handheld floodlight through the darkened interior of a cavernous building that once housed papermaking machines for Great Northern Paper, Senator Angus King is trying to see the future. The gargantuan paper mills that once employed hundreds of residents are not likely to return here to Millinocket. But a new generation of entrepreneurs such as Mike Seal would like King to know that the GMP complex has potential.
There are alternative potential uses, whether it's pellet manufacturing, biodiesel. Those are all options for this building, depending on the scale.
Right. Well, you could have more than one operation in here.
You could.
And here, in the shadow of Mount Katahdin, policy decisions from the Trump administration could affect Millinocket in a very direct way. Later this month, a decision will be made by Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke, who will determine whether the nearby 87,000 acres of forest land designated as a national monument by the Obama administration will keep that status. In addition, new tariffs on Canadian spruce and fir coming into Maine could also have an impact on the development of forest products industries at the former mill's site. Both issues are front and center for Mike Seal, the vice president of Arkatardin, an organization that supports redeveloping the former Great Northern Paper Mill site into a world-class bioindustrial park.
I think a lot of discussions over the past have been one or the other, forestry or tourism. And our position on that is why not both? And we believe it can coexist and we can still have a vibrant forest-based economy here at the breadbasket at the end of the Golden Road.
King says the region would do well to diversify its economic drivers.
All the elements are here, and it's really a question of Mike and the folks from Arkatahdin putting those pieces together. And I think they're following a really smart strategy of not looking for one big home run.
And while it's empty and lifeless now, King says the former GNP facility has enormous potential.
We're turning a page. And there's just this is an enormously valuable site for a number of uses. It has a rail line, it has water, it has electricity from Brookfield, which is on site, and it even has the three-ring binder, the highest speed internet, just about in the country, running right to this site.
Washington may have a big influence on issues that affect the region, but some locals believe that the Katahdin area has the power to revitalize itself.
You'd be surprised at how much the little voice has for an impact.
Peggy Daigle, one of the area residents who accompanied King on his tour, is a former town manager from Millinocket. She believes homegrown marketing efforts to attract tourism, business, and jobs to the region will have a more positive impact than some government initiatives.
Further up you go in state government and in federal government, you get less and less comments, less and less input from the general public, whereas down on the local level, you get it all the time. So I would say that a grassroots effort to get something to happen in this area probably stands a better chance than the average opportunity.
After completing his tour of the Millinocket area, King traveled on to Lincoln for an economic development forum. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.